Let's turn to 2 Peter chapter 2. I want to begin with the reading of verses 10, halfway through verse 10 to the end of the chapter. This is where we've gotten to our study of 2 Peter. So I'm going to begin in the middle of verse 10 and read to the end of the chapter. Speaking of the false teachers, Peter writes, "They are presumptuous, self-willed. They are not afraid to speak evil of dignitaries, whereas angels, who are greater in power and might, do not bring a reviling accusation against them before the Lord. But these, like natural brute beasts made to be caught and destroyed, speak evil of the things they do not understand, and will utterly perish in their own corruption, and will receive the wages of unrighteousness as those who count it pleasure to carouse in the daytime. They are spots and blemishes, carousing in their own deceptions while they feast with you, having eyes full of adultery and that cannot cease from sin, enticing unstable souls. They have a heart trained in covetous practices and are accursed children. They have forsaken the right way and gone astray, following the way of Balaam, the son of Beor, who loved the wages of unrighteousness, but he was rebuked for his iniquity. A dumb donkey speaking with a man's voice restrained the madness of the prophet. These are wells without water, clouds carried by a tempest, for whom is reserved the blackness of darkness forever. For when they speak great swelling words of emptiness, they allure through the lust of the flesh, through lewdness, the ones who have actually escaped from those who live in error. While they promise them liberty, they themselves are slaves of corruption. For by whom a person is overcome, by him also is he brought into bondage. For if, after they've escaped the pollutions of the world through the knowledge of the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, they are again entangled in them and overcome, the latter end is worse for them than the beginning. For it would have been better for them not to have known the way of righteousness than having known it to turn from the holy commandment delivered to them. But it has happened to them according to the true proverb, a dog returns to his own vomit, and a sow having washed to her wallowing in the mire." There's just not anything else like this in the New Testament. Matthew 23 would be about as close as you can get, but to really get to the kind of intense, fierce language that I just read, you'd have to go back to the Psalms, to what's called the imprecatory Psalms. There's a handful of them that's found, but this is not an imprecatory Psalm. This is Peter. And it's Peter talking about those who are brute beast to be caught and destroyed, who are blots and blemishes, who cannot cease from sin, who are accursed, who are insane, they are mad, who are like a dog going back to its vomit and a sow back to the slop, who have a destruction that does not slumber, who need to be caught and destroyed, for whom the blackness of darkness is being reserved, whose latter end is worse than the beginning. And I mean, you read all of that and you almost want to say, "Peter, what are you trying to say?" I mean, Peter could not say it any clearer. This is one sustained denunciation. And there are some who might wonder, is this the way a Christian talks? Does a Christian ever refer to somebody else as a brute beast who ought to be caught and destroyed? Surely Christianity can do better than that. Well, to understand how Peter could talk like this, this is as close to a tirade as you're going to find in the New Testament. And to understand how Peter can talk like this, let me ask you to think about this scenario. Peter is speaking emotionally. He's speaking out of deep emotion, and I can give you a scenario, I think, that you can relate to that will help you understand what Peter's doing here. Suppose you're a parent, and you learn that some human predator is stalking your child. They may be after your child to drag them into drugs. They may be after your child to drag them into some form of perversity, to drag them to a bar to get them to drink, you discover that some human predator is after your child. How are you going to feel about that predator? What are you going to think about that individual? You know, there are movies that have been made where a child has been stalked and captured and drug into some terrible lifestyle and has died, maybe into crime. They've been drug into something and they've died, and the parent finds out about it after the child is dead, and the rest of the movie is about the parent tracking down that predator and killing them. And I've been to some of those movies, and at the end of the show, everybody stands up and applauds. Now, if you can understand as a parent how you might react to someone who's done this to your child, maybe you can understand why a shepherd with a flock that he loves. In 1 Peter 5, Peter says he is a shepherd. Maybe you can understand how a shepherd feels about a wolf that has come into the flock to tear, devour, and destroy. Yes, this is an emotional passage, but it's a justified emotion. It's an emotion that all of us, I think, would have if it was our child who was involved. And I'll tell you something about talking the way Peter talks about now, in this passage. This kind of language is not very popular today. When you stand up and talk about the predators that are in our society, and you talk about them plainly, and you talk about them explicitly, somebody is going to point their finger in your face and say, you know, the real problem here is not them, but you. The real problem is the way you think about them. Just Friday, I wasn't going to use this illustration, but just Friday, I saw a video clip of a United States senator talking to the rest of the Senate about an individual who had been put up for a federal judgeship. Now, this individual is Muslim. And this senator talking had opposed his appointment as a federal judge. And when the senator finished explaining why he opposed approving this man, ratifying this man to be a judge, another senator came down, got to the podium, and accused the first senator of being Islamophobic. The real problem is not this man. The real problem is you and your prejudice. You're a bigot. You're biased against men like him. And the clip I saw is the first senator getting back up and saying, no, I'm not opposing his nomination because he's Muslim. I'm opposing his nomination because he has funded organizations that hate the police. He has funded organizations that hate Americans. And he has funded organizations that hate Jews. That's why I'm opposing his nomination. But anytime you stand up and oppose evil, oppose hatred, someone's going to accuse you of being hateful. The problem is going to be you're anti-this and you're anti-that. You're going to be the problem. And the point I'm making is to speak like the oracles of God, which Peter tells us to do in 1 Peter 4:11, to use this kind of language when it's appropriate, takes courage. It's just a whole lot easier not to say anything when someone who needs to be opposed brings with that opposition the danger of becoming a target yourself. And so I want to talk about what Peter talks about here in this chapter. This chapter, I found this passage really difficult to outline. I like to find the skeleton on the page, the outline on the page, and make the major points of the outline the points of my lesson. But this section by Peter is extremely difficult to outline. And so what I'm going to do is just move back through the passage and give you some identifying marks of false teachers. That's what Peter's talking about here. He introduces the chapter by saying there were false prophets in the days of Israel. There are going to be false teachers among you. And you need to be able to recognize them. And you need to be able to identify them. And you need to be able to realize they are wolves who are entering the flock, and they need to be dealt with. And so the first characteristic I would point you to of a false teacher is that a false teacher is an individual who's made a god of himself. And I see that in the word there in verse 10 where it says they are self-willed. Christ said, I didn't come to do my will. He said this in John chapter 6 that we're studying on Sunday morning. I didn't come to do my will. I came to do the will of Him that sent me. Christians worship God. False teachers worship themselves. They've made themselves God because your God is whatever is most important to you. And when a person makes himself the most important thing in this world, and he's going to do what he wants to do, regardless of what is right or wrong or anyone else thinks, is to make a god of yourself. False teachers and us don't worship the same God. And a false teacher is self-willed. And when you are self-willed, when you have made yourself a god of yourself, you are going to get reckless. You see that word presumptuous there? That's what I started with. They are presumptuous. That particular Greek word means to be a risk taker. It means to be reckless. And that's what little tin horn despots, little tin horn gods do. They just get reckless in their behavior, in their lifestyle. And one of the ways their recklessness is seen, also in verse 10, is they're not afraid to speak evil of dignitaries. And that's a reckless thing to do. To speak evil of dignitaries. The word translated dignitaries literally means glories. It may be referring, I mean, this is just one of those fishbone passages, you know, fishbone statements. I'm not exactly sure what it means, but it may be referring to like we read in Jude verse 9, where Jude says that when the archangel Michael was contending with the devil about the body of Moses, that in that contention, Michael refused to bring a railing accusation against the devil. Now, that's not the easiest verse to try to unravel, try to figure out. But here's what I get out of that. If there's any individual, if there's any being of whom you could properly say, go to hell, it would be the devil, wouldn't it? But Michael didn't even say that to him. Michael opposed him. Michael struggled with him. He contended with him. But he didn't insult him. He left that to God. He'll let God take care of the devil. Michael simply did what he could do to oppose Satan in whatever that's talking about. But the self-will, those who make themselves God, they resort to all kinds of insults and abuse and ridicule. You talk about verbal abuse. The self-willed are good at that. And so they not only speak evil of dignitaries, but we're told they speak of things they don't even understand. In verse 12, they speak evil of things they do not understand. Talk is so cheap. And people who are so full of themselves can just really give out with all kinds of things, and they don't even know what they're talking about. There was a time in the Gospels when Peter said something that he didn't know what he was talking about. That's on the Mount of Transfiguration when they see Moses and Elijah and Christ, and Peter says, "Lord, it's good that we're here. Let's build three tabernacles, one for each of you." And Mark tells us in his account of the Transfiguration, Peter didn't know what he was talking about, but he said it anyway. And that's the way false teachers are. They have nothing to say. They don't know what they're saying, but they say it anyway. And so the false teacher just has no controls, no filters. And then secondly, verse 12, the false teacher lives at the level of an animal. And that's one of the most important things that Peter tells us about in verse 12. But these, like natural brute beast, animals live at the level of their instinct. Animals do what their instinct tells them to do. Men, by contrast, are to live at the level of their intelligence. God has given to man a level of intelligence that he has not given to animals. God has given man rationality. Animals will always go with their gut feeling. They'll always go with their instinct. But there are times when men need to go against their feelings and against their gut instinct. And so men have rationality. They have the ability to think and to reason and to choose. Yet when men surrender their thinking ability, their critical thinking, when they surrender their intelligence, they have reduced themselves to the level of an animal, and they are someone then driven by their appetites, driven by their desire. Verse 14 says this, having eyes full of adultery, they are driven by lust, they are driven by desires, they're also driven by dollars. Verse 14 goes on to say, they have a heart trained in covetous practices. The two things that motivate the false teacher is their desire and dollars. And the reason they love dollars so much is because dollars enable them to have the desires, to finance the desires that they desire. And to live at the level of desire, Paul says in Philippians that there are people who have made a god of their belly. And what that means is they go with their appetite. Whatever they have a taste for, whatever they have a desire for, that's what drives them. And there's a whole lot of people in important positions in this country and in every country who live at the level of an animal. Now, the Bible doesn't teach evolution, but the Bible does teach devolution, by which a higher being, man, can descend to the level of a lower being, an animal. In Psalm 32, verse 9, David says, "Don't be like the donkey and the horse. Don't be like a dumb animal." But the false teacher has descended to that level. And so they make a god of themselves. And Romans chapter 1 tells us, you'll remember, that when men refuse to acknowledge the true God, they end up living like an animal. In fact, they even get below the animals because they then make gods of the animals. And so that's where the false teacher is. And then the third thing is that Paul tells us they are slaves to desire. They not only live at the level of their desire, but they are slaves to desire. Verse 13, they count it pleasure to carouse in daytime. And that word daytime is significant. Usually when men are engaged in shameful things, they want to do it at night. They don't want anyone to know what they're doing. They want to hide it. But these kind of men, who are so controlled by their appetites, to where verse 14, they cannot cease from sin, they lose all sense of shame. Did you know today has been declared the Transgender Day of Visibility? If you want a better example of a society that's lost all sense of shame, I don't think I can come up with one than that. On a day when most people are remembering the resurrection, we've been told to keep this day as the Transgender Day of Visibility. That comes from a society that has lost all sense of shame, that cannot cease from sin even one day out of the year. And that's where false teachers are. Birds of a feather flock together. And the false teachers, what do? Well, they look for people who are like them. Verse 13. As those who count it pleasure to carouse. They are spots and blemishes carousing. The King James says, those who like to riot and those who count it sport. They make a sport out of indecency. They make a sport out of perversity. They make a sport out of immorality. And they look for unstable souls, verse 14, enticing unstable souls, birds of a feather flock together. They're on the prowl for victims that they can persuade to join with them in their filth. And so when you operate at the level of an animal, this is where you are. Peter says they are a stain. They are blots and blemishes, spots and blemishes on your fellowship. Now, I've heard that a tie started life as a napkin. You know, you tie it around your neck to keep food off your shirt. But now that napkin just kept developing and developing until it's become this. I tell you what, to get a big blob of ketchup on this is as, you know, nasty as getting it on your shirt. To get a big spot of something on you. There's no beauty in that. And there's no beauty in these false teachers. And verse 13, because of the harm they've done, they are going to be harmed. They are going to be destroyed in their own destruction. Now, we've talked about the false teacher despising authority, being unable to stop sinning, being driven by their desire. There's a good example of this from the Old Testament I'd point you to, and it's in Numbers chapter 16. A man by the name of Kohath, who was a Levite, part of the group that carried the furniture of the tabernacle from place to place. Kohath got 250 others to go with him to confront Moses and Aaron. And what they told Moses is, you're just taking too much on you, Moses. You need to spread the work around. You need to diversify a little bit. You need to delegate and let some of the rest of us take over your chores. Well, you know, public explanations often hide a private motivation. The real thing they were after, what Kohath really wanted, verse 10, number 16, was to be a priest. He didn't want to be a lowly Levite. He wanted to be a priest. And what happened is because they persisted in their demands to Moses, we want to be priests. We don't want to be these servant Levites. And the earth opened up and swallowed 250 of them. All 250 were swallowed. Okay, that's bad enough. You know what happened the next day? The very next day, the entire congregation of Israel appears for Moses and said, "Man, you just overreacted. That wasn't right what you..." They took the side of Kohath. The very next day, seeing 250 swallowed up. And Moses called the shot. Moses has said, well, what are you going to think about these 250 if the earth opens and swallows them up? And then the earth opens and swallows them up. But the very next day, the congregation, because it was as self-willed as Kohath, confront Moses. And 14,700 of them die before Aaron steps in and pleads for them. And that may be the greatest thing Aaron ever did. We talk about the humility and the mercy of Christ. Do you know what the ultimate act of humility is? The ultimate act of mercy, it's when you're willing to intercede for and plead for and save someone who doesn't want anything to do with you. The prodigal son only came back when he had nowhere else to turn, and who runs out to meet him? The father he had shamed and sinned against and offended is the first one who goes out. There is no deeper act of humility than when you take the side of the one who doesn't want anything to do with you. Now, how do you become a false teacher? How do you get to the level of being a brute beast? Do you get up one morning and say, you know what? I think I'll be a beast today. I think I'll just turn into an animal today. Well, look at verse 15 again. They have forsaken the right way. Have you ever got up the morning of a trip and said, I think on this trip I'll take the wrong road? Now, there have been trips where I got off on the wrong road, but it wasn't intentional. It was inadvertent. It may have been due to inattention. I mean, I've been thinking about something and I have zoomed right back past where I should have got off the interstate. I was coming home from Midway Airport Monday night. Flew back in there and I got my car and I'm trying to get on the interstate there and I wasn't paying attention. There's the interstate as I'm flying by. So I'd go down to make a U-turn in the middle of the street. Now, I wasn't intending to miss that turn. But sometimes people, due to lack of diligence, lack of attention, they take the wrong road. Maybe their GPS is broken. You know, they take the wrong road. And they've gone so far down it before they realize they're on it. They sometimes think there's no need even going back. I'll just keep going. And that's what Balaam did. And the absolute foolishness of it is seen in the fact that his donkey understood theology better than he did. The donkey kept wanting to go right, the right way. And Balaam, because he was wanting to do some sinning, would beat the donkey. And finally, the donkey spoke to him and rebuked him. Balaam had descended to a level below the level of his donkey. And the last thing I'll say about false teachers, I could say more, I've got more to say, but the last thing I'll say this morning, verse 19. You can't believe a false teacher. When someone has descended to the level of an animal, don't listen to them. Don't believe them. Christ said, don't give that which is holy to the dogs. Don't cast your pearls before swine. Don't have anything to do with these people. And so Peter in verse 19 says, oh, they promise knowledge, but they'll fill you with lies. They promise freedom, but they're leading you into slavery. They promise purity, but they're giving you corruption. And if you listen to them and are overcome by them, you are a slave. You've lost your freedom. And you can't win by losing. Now, during March Madness, coaches try to talk about how they really won even though they lost. They call that a moral victory. Now, the Illinois coach didn't try that yesterday because we just flat lost yesterday. But a lot of times, I heard some of the coaches this month talking about, how in losing they really won. That's never the way it is with a false teacher. You listen to the false teacher in verses 20 to 22. Peter tells you where you end up. And folks, nothing in the New Testament more clearly says that you can be a genuine Christian and then lose it all. You can be a genuine Christian, but then you can get to the point where you are no longer a Christian. And brilliant commentators I have read do their best try to convince you that if you're a Christian, you'll never be anything but. And the reason they try to convince you of that, and the reason they do all of the gymnastics around these last three verses, is because they've accepted the doctrine, once saved, always saved. They read these verses with a premise, with a presupposition that's not taught in the Bible. Now, if I started with their premise, I'd do the same thing they did. But if Peter says anything, he's making it clear it doesn't matter that we were once forgiven and in fellowship with God. If we listen to these false teachers, we're going to lose it all. The promises of God are real. 2 Peter 1 verse 4. There have been given to us precious promises. They're real. But the warnings of God are real also. And so the next study here in 2 Peter chapter 3, we'll talk about some of the things false teachers say. And we ought to have a determined animus against any false teacher, any animal who tries to come in purporting to teach the children of God, but who's here to prey on the children of God.